Hey, Kevin. There we go. We are live. Hey guys. Just give us a second. We've got a couple of technical issues. We've had a couple tonight. Here we are. Here's Kevin now. There we go, get that shared. Good evening, guys. And we're back.
Good evening, Jake.
Yay.
Sorry about that.
We may have a few technical difficulties tonight. There's a few gremlins in my shed this evening, but we'll try our best to get on. We are relaunching the Expad Lads podcast. Dominic Negus was supposed to be on, but he'd unfortunately double booked, so he's off doing another interview this evening. So Frank Portinari, the legend himself, has agreed to come on and take his place, and we have Kevin Lane. Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Good evening, Jack.
How are we?
All good.
Yeah, thank you for having me on here.
Yeah, it's good to have you.
I wanted to do this for a little while. Yeah. Right, let's have a look. Who have we got? We've got some people jumping in. Cool. So, ex-Bad Lads podcast. We want to do something a bit different tonight, guys. We want to talk about nearly 20 years in prison for a murder commit that he was fitted up for. Frank Portinari is a former leader of the UDA and former gun runner. All of us have sort of turned our lives around, so we wanted to bring something different. Because I don't think many people are talking about mental health anymore. And I think as guys and as, the way we've been, we sort of suffer with that, and we can suffer in silence, and I don't want that to happen. I wanted Kevin to come on because, like I said, Kevin spent 20 years nearly in prison. And I wanted to know what that does to a mind.
Well, first of all, mental health is far more serious than what for men and young boys than what is realised in this country. The amount of young men taking their lives now is just unbelievable. So mental health programs is very important for people to get involved out there and support people, and look for signs in people, whether it's just a basic hello or having a cup of tea with someone, or stop someone hanging themselves or taking their life. So I've actually been doing a lot with the mental health for some time now, just communicate with mental health groups via messages through my social platforms without realising the impact at the time that was these, apart from obviously the most serious, taking their lives, but the impact on their families and the wider spread of it. So I would like to see more people stand up and admit to having problems. That would help. But in prison, having mental health problems is milked by prisoners for many reasons: adjudications, not getting nicked, getting what they want. I know people who slash their arms, but they slash their arms in a way that doesn't sever the artery, but just squirts blood. And we're all made differently. That's what we have to bear in mind. That so I did my sentence, and I accept that I may be a stronger character than some mentally through some of the walks of life that I've been on. But there's other people in there that just haven't made that. They have had such tragedies in their life, and now they're locked up for whatever reason. But it's broken. It's the last bleeding straw. And then wallop, they have mental health problems, not just giving up, but they're just giving up in life. Their brain, it can't handle it no more. And that's a mental health issue, because prison, it certainly doesn't welcome you with open arms, which we don't want. It doesn't cater for their customers, for their clientele. And I realised that very early on in prison. And I thought, well, someone said to me, Pat Purcell said, listen, Kevin, you can't get bitter because you're angry anyway. It'll ruin your personality, which I'm quite a happy-go-lucky fella. He said, so you've got to make a life for yourself in here now, because you're going to be here for a long time, Kevin. And I thought about it, and I thought, he's absolutely bang on the nail. So what I'm going to do, I like my training, so I'm going to carry on with my training. I'll fight my case. It's the hardest fight I've ever had in my life, and this is going to be it. So in terms of how I got through my sentence, I had a battle in front of me, and that battle was, I'm going to take this battle to the criminal justice system. I'm going to keep pounding and keep pounding and keep pounding until I get a result. And that's what I think got me through the determination. But that's probably because I had something to hook my hook onto and grab onto to pull me through. And I realise that now. But again, you have to have some determination to do that for what I've been through. The criminal justice system is not geared up to help people miscarriages of justice. There's a lot of organisations out there, but there's a lot of people in prison just don't get no help. So the frustration of fighting for yourself whilst you're innocent, whilst in prison, very difficult. Just turn to get your mail out. So my mail used to go to MI5 and MI6 before it went anywhere. Real intrusion. So closed visits, legal bugging of your legal visits by Michael Howard. How the hell can you have that being legal, so it won't interfere with your trial? So everything that you are doing in there, from fighting your case to living, to getting your case out there, getting information and help, it's a massive struggle. And that battle alone can be very, very wearing. But I got through it. I've had a laugh in many times in prison, thank God. Because men are very, or human beings, are very, so to say, ingenious. And they turned bad times into good, as they've done in prison of war camps, sadly. Mm. But you find that it's the same sort of thing. You look for the good, you have a laugh, it's meant together like a building site type of atmosphere, and sometimes all extremely dangerous and violent. I accept that as well. But if you can find the goodness in that and draw from that and be involved in that, it's better to be having a laugh whilst you're in a shithole than depressed. And that's what you should do. So a bit of a long answer there.
Well, I mean, as you know, I have a sort of a connection with miscarriages of justice and that. And I was thinking about this the other day because, you know, I'm involved in the Osborne case and. Trying to get him out is and some of the, you know, mental health that he's suffering is really poor, and that doesn't help with the system pounding down. And you, Frank, you know, I know that you were in, you know, when you went to prison, you were in for sort of extreme stuff. So it was like, you know, how does that affect your mental health and other people around you, how they sort of portray you?
I think what I've learned from it, Jack, is if you're in a position of responsibility and you've got certain power over people, you know, you tend to not look at yourself because you're leading other people. So you don't take time to look. And I don't know if I've said this to you before, a sort of phrase I use, you get on a treadmill and you press the green button and you go forward. And you don't look to the left, you don't look to the right, you don't look behind you. And then one day you press the red button and you get off and you say, fuck, how did I get here? And what you forget is if you've been in a certain position and you've said you're going to represent people, well, I haven't got a lot of patience for pastoral preachers. You know, if I say I'm going to do something, I'll do it. Well, once you've said you're going to do it, you've got to do it, haven't you? And then there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that, and psychological, mental, and physical. So it's only when you stop and you look back on it, you start to question yourself, and you find that if you're not careful, you've actually clouded over some of your own problems because you're so busy representing other people, looking after them. I have a chap who phones me every Sunday. He's an ex-prisoner. We were away for similar things. And he phones every Sunday, and he's got some really serious problems. He's got some very, very serious problems. But of course, what it was doing was shielding my own, because I was so busy being an ear to him, I couldn't possibly think that I had any problems myself. And when I was in prison, I was a listener. And that was a bit of a turning point for me, because you had tough men, or certainly gave the appearance they were tough men. But when you sat in a cell with them, you listened to some of the problems they had, it was unbelievable. And they were never going to disclose that on the wing or out on the yard. And that taught me a lot. But again, I didn't actually look at myself. So some of my advice would be to men is be great, always be a great listener to people and assist other people, but take some time to study yourself as well, because that could do you some serious damage later in life.
Yeah, I agree with that, mate. I agree with that. I mean, my crime was nowhere near as sort of extreme as, like, whatever you were accused of, you know. But it's like, I guess, I try not to let other people's judgment sort of cloud me, but it does at times. But, you know, Kevin, you were accused of murder. You know, Frank, you were a paramilitary, so it, you know, on par with terrorism and how people see that.
I think the thing is, what you get is people always wanting you to say sorry.
How does that affect you still now, when people still? Sorry, we lost you there for a second, mate.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're saying people were trying to get you to say sorry.
Yeah, I think one of the first things people want you to do is to say sorry. I think they want you to sort of show remorse and so on. And I'm not going to do that just for show, because I think that dilutes people that are genuinely sorry and people that have regrets. And I don't have that many regrets. And I've always said that probably the people I hurt the most were the people I cared the most about, and that was my own family. Clearly, I did not want the conflict to continue, and anything I can do to contribute for it not returning to that conflict, I always will. But I think sometimes people just want you to sit there and say sorry, 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 sorry. I do feel a little bit strange, because Kevin didn't kill anybody, and yet done a disgustingly long sentence before it got to the stage where he was released and proven innocent. Whereas in my case, my intent was to kill people. So, you know, there's the irony. I actually didn't, thank God, because I think that it would have been something I would have regretted, definitely. But I won't know. Did I contribute to other people's deaths? Then clearly I did. So guilt, I'm not sure. It's a conflict that we should never, as I say, wish had never happened. And I hope everybody can live in peace now. But I do know how it's impacted on people's mental health. There's no doubt about that. And that's just not, that's not people just part of it. I mean, that's their families, that's their children. And even now, you know, years later, 25 years after the peace process, people are still suffering with mental health problems. And anything I can do to help that, I certainly will.
Okay. So, interesting. This the criminal justice system does want you to say sorry, but they don't want to say sorry themselves for the most grave miscarriages of justice this country would see. But it just won't say they're sorry. They will say, oh, we're looking into it, we're going to have a reform and such like that. So when you're doing courses in prison, it's all about taking responsibility for your actions. So if you're a miscarriage of justice, you can't participate in some of the courses because you've got to discuss the index offence. Whereas I took a court case and was able to do offender behaviour courses discussing previous cases. So otherwise I'd have been buggered because it wouldn't have gone anywhere and tens of thousands of other people wouldn't have gone anywhere. There's a bit of like, you don't always get a result there. It's because the hand is forced based on the numbers. And what else can they do? They can't build enough prisons, so they've got to release you. But to do that, they've got you to get on your hands and knees and slap around the face with a wet fish and just sit like a nodding dog. Because these courses that they get you to do, like the essential thinking skills, they're now going there, you know, I've got to go do this course, but I'll copy your work. I'll sit there like a nodding dog. I'll have a member of staff teach me. Sometimes they've only done a few weeks training before they've been on there. And yet you've got to sit there and profess to, you're going to do this, you're going to do that for yourself. And it's all an absolute crock of bleeding rubbish, I've got to tell you. Because I like to see how after these staff and managerial positions behave in circumstances that we're faced with and go to prison for. And you think, you don't have to be a criminal to go to prison. You may have committed an act that is considered criminal, and therefore you will go to prison. But you do see the best of the best and the worst of the worst in prison. It's a fact. But in terms of saying sorry, doing time in prison for a long time does make you think about a lot of things, for actions that you did. And I've discussed it today. So my father was an alcoholic, and he passed away sadly. He had an illness. And one day I had seen him for many years. And when I did see him again, I took him in, put him somewhere to live, got him all new clothes, everything else. But then had him out for dinner on a Sunday. And unfortunately, there was alcohol in the house. And he drank it when I popped up to the shops. So I came home and took him home. And I never see him again from that. So I was a young kid. I was 21. I just bought another house and moved. So it was a nice house. There was a lot of work done there. As a young man, my regret and having time to think in prison made me feel sorry for myself in that I should have realised my father had an alcohol problem and worked with it and taken the alcohol out of the house. So I was in there feeling pain, as many other prisoners do, and a lot of people say rightly so, even when you're innocent, they say rightly so. And that changes a person. His courses don't change a person. Saying sorry doesn't change a person. Age will change a person. Circumstances in life will change a person. Having a baby, having a death, an old woman running off and leaving you in there. All sorts of problems. But primarily, courses do not change a person. What changes a person is life-changing experiences. And through that, a person will become repentful and sorry for a lot of their actions. And that's the change you want in a person, which genuinely is sorry. And it'd be far better if they could work with people in that manner, like Norway and the Swedish countries, where they're far better at rehabilitating. Crime offending is best in Europe, of course, in Norway. And look what happened out there, of course, with all the students and how they approach. I mean, the judge goes up and shakes his hand. I can barely do that. But that's the culture out there, it's forgiveness in that. So look at them, forgiveness, feeling pain. I wonder what they do for mental health out there. That's what someone should look at. Follow other countries, because we definitely are not doing it right. I'd like to know the statistics and the amount of young lives that are going for taking at the moment. Not in prison either. I'm on the outside. And people should look at that. Who's looking at the social platforms and the propaganda and crap that's filling their heads is taking them to cinemas. Not just that. But let's look at it. What do kids do, okay, about mental health? Is it healthy to sit in front of a TV as an adult, click, 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 and having nothing else in your life but a TV? Some people enjoy it, that's their life, but you can't say that everybody does. They just fall into that way of life because they've got nothing else to do. And that's the same in prison. So they're sitting in a cell becoming institutionalised. That's all they know in a concrete box. That's not hurting them really, probably, is it? So I think that you've got to give people hope when they're in prison, and you've got to give them a chance of release. Of course, unless they're absolutely nuts and you just can't have them on the street, I accept that. But there's definitely not enough mental health issues in prison. It's all about just keeping the lid on the place, keeping people quiet. But they should give them something to do, not vegetate in a cell. Make everybody go to the gym. That'd be good for the mental health. This once a day, don't give them out monkeys if you're 70, 80 or 80. I've seen people in prison at that age. Get them down there and walk around their yard or do something. But they've got to get out of that cell, because sitting in there vegetating is not good for your mental health over long periods of time, or even some people doing short periods. It's can't handle it. But they're definitely in prison, because they're causing mental health problems in prison.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I mean, the problem is that it's not about rehabilitation anymore, is it? It's about just sort of locking people up for the crime. It's about filling ticking boxes and things like that. I mean, you've admitted that your behaviour got worse in prison because you'd have a tear up, and because you told me before, but because you were innocent, that affected you and that made you more violent.
But the statistics show that people who are miscarriages of justice explode. They just go nuts in terms of anger. And that's, I did, of course, I had a lot of that in me. And it came out when I was being threatened. But the system again, they said they deal with you. Draconian beat you up, run on violence. Not run on rehabilitation. Get in that cell. We will wrap you up, we will zip tie you, and we will spray you with pepper spray, and we'll come with you with truncheons. We'll have two squads, so the first one can come in and have a good ruck with you, and the second one will come in when they're fresh, and you can have a ruck with them and all. That's what I had. I had some proper tear-ups with them. And did that do me any good? I can have someone at the door talk to you, talk you down, and negotiate. Why's it got to be violent all the time? So I think we definitely need to look at it's whether they say nature or nurture. Well, how are you nurturing people in prison with the way you treat them like that? It's definitely wrong. But in where do we go from here? We can talk about it all day and put the world to right, can't we? It's action you want.
So, I mean, I ask you both, what sort of applications could we as sort of ex-offenders do to make life better in there for offenders? What, I have a friend that's a chaplain in Wayland, and he asked the same to the prisoners. But what can we do as reform characters to help make life easier in jail for other people?
Well, I think that, I mean, I'm a big advocate. I've been sober quite a while, and I'm not suggesting I'm reaching anybody of any importance and influence, but I do try to repeat it as often as possible, is that I think people need mentors. I think people shouldn't be just, while they're in prison, and certainly before they leave. I mean, we all know there's a very high profile parole hearing that's just gone on. And I write to the person concerned regularly. I met him 30 years ago in Winston Green on the KA yard. And it's not a case, it doesn't seem to be a case of whether he should be released. It's how can they release him? Yeah. Well, what have they done? There's been absolutely no preparation whatsoever. They've not appointed somebody either within the system or someone who could befriend him, from outside the system. And that concerns me. I mean, I certainly haven't done the sort of the amount of years that he's done, and certainly not the amount of time that Kevin did. And when I do talks, there was no attempt to rehabilitate me at all. There was none whatsoever, to the degree that when I actually left prison, It actually enforced my views, because I thought, I've just done time for this. I'm not going to disown this because I've just done the time for it. So no attempt. There was none whatsoever attempt to rehabilitate me. That took me to do that. many, many years later, it took me to do that. But fortunately, I did have a family to come home to. I did have a home to come home, you know, back to. But I dread to think how it works for the blokes that don't, who literally just get put outside the gate and get told, you know, to go and report to a hostel and basically be put amongst people. I'm probably going to get them back in trouble again. I just don't understand it. There's just not enough provision. And I would certainly, you know, to be willing to act as a mentor to somebody, to help them with the process, you know, to come out. But I dare say they probably put lots of qualifications required, in front of you before you could even do it. And whether people could have the time to do that, I believe they'd have the intent. I think they'd have the goodwill and the good heart to do it. But whether ex-offenders, who ironically would be the perfect people to do it, because they've been through those experiences, or some of those experiences. But I can't see it happening, unfortunately, because I don't think that's what the game plan is. I mean, the whole talk of people not reoffending, I don't actually really believe that. I actually believe it's in their interest for people to come out and reoffend, because they live off that. That's how they get their wages. So I'm a bit cynical when it comes to that. I want it to work, clearly. I want it to work for the, you know, for the people that have done the sentences. I want their lives to improve. But I don't see them getting the proper help to do it. And if that doesn't lead to mental health problems, then I don't know what does.
Well, I mean, it's been 20 odd years since I was in, and you know, but I needed, you know, even when, you know, 8 years ago when I started dealing with my trauma, I needed to deal with that trauma to be able to sort of then look at education and getting trauma informed and learning to, you know, there's a lot of kids in prison, not even kids, you know, adults and lags and, you know, whatever you want to call them, that are institutionalized, and they're not getting the help that they need because they're not getting the mental health help. That they're not getting the education in how to deal with trauma. They're not getting enough education. It's difficult enough to, there are a lot of people that go in there that are illiterate, that can't read or write. I learned to do that in there. My cellmate helped me do that because I couldn't get on a course because it was all about filling in boxes, and they got more money for people doing degrees. But, you know, we need better education. We need it in mental health, in whatever.
I'll tell you what I think. I think that the prison system would do far better if they had ex-prisoners on committees that were making decisions and having input. So I was asked to be on a committee with the Home Office when I was in High Down Prison on Recall. And Peter Atherton and a number of other prison directors. I remember he said to me, it's always worth having us to say, sometimes a little bit challenging, but worth listening to. So if they listen to us, when many prisons have got a lot of good ideas, and if they can have an input into matters within the prison, even down to incentives or punishing people and that, I think that you'd have a change then. You're not really going to get someone fighting for your corner that knows it with white collar. They see it, and some see it in a different light. Whereas you'd have a prisoner see it, I, for instance, and many other people, may see it logically, which would be a better solution for all, to stop that person getting in trouble in prison. Mental health or violence or drink or drugs, having something to hold on to. But when you break the family ties by cutting families off, making them travel hundreds of miles, sometimes days traveling, sometimes more, access to your family via phones, or I mean, it's a lot of sales now, but then it's having the money to do it, so it's a strain on the outside family. It's matters like that that cause massive stress. Not having conjugal visits. It isn't about giving someone his leg over or her leg over. It's about what maintaining stability in that person. And that stability is having a rock. And that woman needs that rock, or that man needs that rock outside. And they need to come together and hold and unite because they're starved love and affection. So having that bit of affection once in a while for the kids to see their parents and whatever, it would do so much better than what they do at the moment. And they were looking at conjugal visits in about 2004, 2006. A big committee went to America. I remember them coming into Whitehall, and one of the governors told me he was going. You know, I said, then I said, you won't be getting anything in that area in England for a long time. So I do think you should have someone on a committee who has a bit to say. I think you should reduce the sentences. Absolutely. I've had armed robbers, pals of mine, a long time ago. Done a bit of porridge. Learned the trade, which is, you might have 15 people in a paint shop. You have 1,200 people in Nick. You have 15 people in a brick shop. They used to have massive workshops. Get in it, and then workshops should be producing something. And you learn the trade when you go into the workshop, what you're producing. Whether it's joinery or machinery or something. But something someone can do, even down to preparing frames for building sites and putting them together and painting them, whatever. They're learning the trade. You give someone an option and they're going to work and they're earning the money each day. So they're not spending it on drugs. When they brought in the IEP level, incentive earnings privilege, that caused more drugs in the prison system than ever. Because before, if I had money, you know, you wanted a can of, here's a can of tomatoes, Jack, or whatever, you know. And then all of a sudden, the drugs came in. Then they stopped it. They said, right, you're going to have £2.50 this week on basic. You're going to have £7.50 and you're going to have a tenner. But you've got to choose between phoning your family, getting a canteen, getting a tub of washing powder or some tea bags or something, and you've got no money to do it. What do? Well, I used to send money to people, okay? Other people, no problem. I will get a gram of heroin or I will sell some of this bleeding other stuff they smoke. I forget what it's called. That's not my head.
Spice.
What?
Spice.
Spice, that's it. And then the prison just changed. Bloody so many people on the gear. And of course, with that goes a lot of other things. So I think they need to look at what they're doing by keeping, take the TVs away, have limited on the time. If you're up to 11 o'clock because you're going to work the next day. You want to watch something, it's being taped that evening, you can watch it tomorrow night. Right? You can just go into a channel. But you're going up for work and the weekend, it'll be on till bleeding, whatever time, you know. But come Sunday night, it's going off at 11 again. And you've got people in there at the minute who's just sleeping away through bird, taking loads of pills, loads of drugs, whatever, and sleeping it through. They haven't got to go to work, so they haven't got to work for them. So they stay in bed all the time. What do people do when they're depressed? They sleep. So they don't work out yet. So I think there's if you had a bit of input from people, shorter sentences, man can do activities in the cell, so, such as you don't have a telly. Like I say, I don't have a telly for preference, but days when people used to play cards and Scrabble and read, learn to read and do all sorts of stuff in the cell because you've got nothing else to do but occupy yourself. The brain is far more functional and survives better when it's busy thinking.
Yep.
Not sitting there vegetating, watching the TV. So they're giving people 35, 40 years, 20 years, these young kids, for 20 years, these kids are going to be watching telly and playing PlayStation.
Is it that too is easy? Not good
for anyone.
Is it too easy now? Yeah, made it too easy.
Very violent in there, extremely violent. Your fellow interns aren't what they used to be. Now they put boiling hot water on people's feet to get people to send money to their families, to send them money and all sorts of stuff, robbing them for trainers and stuff, which wouldn't have gone on. It didn't go on when I was in there. And I got recalled to that system. I thought, my God, what am I coming into? So it's not easy like that. It's easy for the lads that are in that way of life and doing sod all. They're dealing drugs and they've got pals in there. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to people that you said, like, want to get locked up just so they could go spend time with the mates. And you know, they'd work out, well, if I go and do this, this is about the time that I'm going to get. So, and that's about as much freedom as I want to give at this minute. And they would go, they would commit a crime so they could get sent away with the mates.
They're at home, the mums and dads or whoever's giving them aggravation for not working. You're smoking that stuff. I can smell it. You're doing this. You're doing that. You're up to no good. Where are you getting your money from? So they get a bit of bird. They get in there with their mates, like they say. And I think, great, I'm going to go home in a little while, break from the parents. I'll earn a few quid while I'm in there serving up. I'll get more money in here than I am out here in a minute. And I might get nicked by the staff, but what's that? Nothing. So it's easy for a lot of people when it comes to way of life. The old criminals are gone, where they plan a bit of work and put a lot of effort into it, like the Hatton Garden burglars. A lot of preparation, a lot of clever men. Determined men, them criminals are gone now. So they need to start catering for the type of prisoners they've got that are coming in from the streets for certain crimes. Not men who had a lot of respect and morals. Half of them are in there for robbing other drug dealers. So much for having respect for your fellow prisoners.
It's different, isn't it? It's different. I mean, I couldn't handle it in there now. You know, my brother's been in and out. He hasn't been in for a few years, but, you know, he was brought up in that system. You know, I remember when men like Alan Lord were fighting for better conditions because it was Victorian, it was draconian, it was, you know, 23-hour lockup.
He's a strong character, Alan. I'm telling you, a very determined man. Very determined.
Mm.
Yeah, he did fight him. And
I would say, to bring a little bit of a bit of a good news story, if you like, yeah. It's only reiterating what Kevin's saying, is that when I was doing the industrial cleaning class in Swaleside, it gave me something to focus on. It gave, I passed various qualifications, the MVQs and opportunity certificates. I was given the opportunity to do the assessor's course, which I passed, which in turn gave me the opportunity to teach the other inmates, which I thoroughly enjoyed because it gave me something to focus on. And I knew that I was helping other people. Yeah, of course, a few of them said, look, Frank, if I'll give you a Mars bar, I'll give you some phone cards, can you, you know, put me through and all that? And I say, no, you won't get no pleasure out of it. Do what I've done. Put the hard work in, pass, and you'll feel a lot more proud of yourself. You get your certificate, still come in handy. And of course, when I did leave, I did get into cleaning. In fact, I had a partnership with someone for a few years. I was glad I did what I did. And people do need to get out of their cells. I find at the moment, look, when I was on KA, and I ain't looking for sympathy, and, you know, it's, in my case, I did do something wrong. So I take it on the chin. I'm very philosophical about it. In fact, I was very lucky. I should have got a lot more. But the conditions, you know, I describe it to people. I don't say, oh, I'm a tough man, you know, I learned to live with it. No, you live like a dog. You know, it was 23 and a half hours bang up. It was a freezing cold cell. It was one shower a week. No access to the chapel, the library. Your food was brought to the door. You know, you live like a dog. We didn't even, when I was away, you didn't even have association. That came in a lot later because the POA, the Prison Officers Association in Winston Green, fought against it. And eventually they had to cave in and they had to give us a couple of hours in the afternoon or a couple of hours in the evening. But by the same token, I wouldn't have wanted it too easy because it wouldn't have been a punishment then, would it? And it worries me that people are going in there now and they're getting treated better in some cases than what they are out on the street in their own life. So, you know, that's not a punishment. And I think we have to distinguish between some people do need to be punished. And I'm not talking about in draconian ways, punished, but assisted, but helped, you know. And at the moment, I don't see that. I just don't see it. And I'm the same as you, Jack. There's no way I could go away now. No way in a million years. Because I think in order to defend myself, I probably have to do someone a lot of harm, and that would only get me even, you know, more years. So what would be the point in that? So any young people I spoke to today, I would say have a very serious think about what you do. If you do go in there, at least do the best you can for yourself. And as I say, through that listening, I met some people, very, very clever people. People that had done some, you could say they can't be that clever because they got caught. But you know what I mean when I say that. There were some clever people there. Do you know they couldn't write a letter to their wives or their family? And when I was a listener, they used to sit and cry in front of me because they couldn't put a pen to paper. And the amount of letters, even Valentine's Day, situations like that. Frank, would you write me a little poem to send to my wife? And I thought that was so sad, so sad. And I remember the time a bloke opposite me, I'd been in there a couple of nights before listening to his story, and I can't remember which one it was. He had one of, you know, it poisons your blood. I forget what it is. He was convinced he'd never be able to kiss his wife again. He'd never be able to kiss his kids. And he hung himself. And that haunted me for days and days. It absolutely haunted me that a man got to that stage. And I remember being asked, did I, because I used to spend so much time with him, you know, did I want a counsellor to speak to me? You don't say yes, do you, when you're in prison with other blokes? You say, no, I'm all right, I'm okay, because you don't want to show any weakness in you. But I'll tell you what, it did affect me. And in hindsight, I probably should have spoken to a counsellor. But, you know, I'm wiser now. And that's why I say I think we should be in a position to go and talk to these young fellas or women and say to them, look, you know, this is avoidable. You can avoid this and you can have some aspirations in life and you can improve your life. But, you know, whether that opportunity is ever given, as I say, to offer people mentors, I'm not so sure, to be honest.
I mean, I'm of the firm belief that, I mean, we're all writers, we've all written books, and, you know, I believe in the catharsis of writing a book. I used to find it stressful, but I do find it sort of helpful. And I think that we should be, you know, I know the proceeds of crime actually, yep.
Yeah, books out there, go on.
There we go. You know, I know the Proceeds of Crime Act and stuff like that, but we should be nurturing minds and teaching them how to write stories, whether they be biographical or whether they be fiction. And, you know, because you can make money off fiction, you know, in there. And I think that we should be teaching that. We should be taking writing courses into prisons. We should be teaching them to build emotional intelligence, because writing and getting your feelings down on paper helps strengthen resolve and emotional intelligence. And when you've got emotional intelligence, that builds resilience. And then you can sort of then start working with trauma, because a lot of these kids in prison, a lot of these adults in prison, they're still dealing with trauma, you know.
Can I just ask you, so people should give this some thought. It's excellent what you said, emotion. People should be punished with love. I agree with that. Not beating kids up, punishing with love. Make them a bad pain when they see you upset. That's the best cure. My kids, that's what that was, and it worked. But what people don't think about is what research has been done, current research, into locking people up for long periods of time in a concrete box, how they live now in prison. How long has the research been estimated that a person will last before he starts acting differently and having psychological defects? That is what they should be looking at. Because at the moment, they're saying, I'm going to lock you up for 40 years. Yeah. And people do come home after 40 years. But we're going to put you back out on the street. What are they releasing into the street? What type of person? And how much management that person will need? And I'm not talking of Charlie here, okay? Charlie's got a good support network. But there's a lot of people out there that haven't. And they are the ones who go straight back into prison. So if they didn't lock people up for such long periods of time, I'm not just talking about weekly, I'm talking about yearly. The most people who are likely least to reoffend are lifers. And those are the ones that are doing 12 and 14 years back then. and they didn't come back to do that amount of time. And they learned trades in prison, a lot of them, unless they were career criminals. They had hope and they had something to hang on to. But when you've got, you know, when I got to 10 years, I thought, God, how much more of this shit have I got to put up with? Fuck me, I can't have no more of this. Well, I did, of course, but I thought, I've got to get beaten out of this mental place. And I'm lucky enough to have that resolve, but 20 years I served, and there's people done far more than me in there now, and the conditions that I did, I feel for them. But I'll tell you what, everybody out there that says bang them up and lock them up, keep them in there, that ain't no good. There's a lot of people outside that are suffering as a result, and that has implications on society. And the bigger picture is that. And of course, it does keep people in jobs. There are people who need to be removed from society for the deeds that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
But deal with your, judge a country by how you treat their prisoners, how they treat their prisoners. Very good thing, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I know lots of people that would say, you know, lock them up. And prime thing was about when Christmas was coming up, and it put what the prisoners were getting on Facebook or some article, and people were saying, oh, they shouldn't get a Christmas dinner. They've done a crime. They should do the time. And my point is, they've lost their freedom. That is their punishment. And you can't keep punishing and punishing and punishment. Their punishment is they've lost their liberty. They've lost their freedom. They can't vote. They can't do anything else. You know, all they can do is their time.
Well, let Frank have a quick chat here, because we're holding all the court here. But quickly, I would say they should definitely take... Sorry, Frank, one second. They should definitely... The old saying... Listen to someone who knows, who's got the experience in there. But they don't. They don't listen to us, Frank, do they?
No, because you get, I mean, what's the point? You get, you know, some well-meaning 25-year-old officer, you know, he does want to improve the world, you know, and improve prison life. But what does he base it on? What experiences is he going to base it on to understand what it's like for a prisoner or a prisoner's family? He's not lived long enough to have any life experiences. He might have read it out of a book. He might have taken a course. But I'm sorry, it's a poor second option. Yeah. And you, I think initially young men like to listen to older men who've lived a life. Once they get beyond what they think, there might be a bit of glamour involved. And I get this sometimes. I get this. I know that there will be people who will buy me a drink, shake my hand, give me a pat on the back. Well done, Frank. You stood up for what you believed in, blah, 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 blah. That has absolutely no effect on me whatsoever. I'm more interested in making sure somebody doesn't go down the same road as me. And it doesn't even have to be the same extreme with me or the same circumstances. It can be in all walks of life. You can take your job too seriously. You can take your jobs too extremes. You can push people out of the way to get to the top of where you want to be and not be concerned about the impacts on other people's life. And eventually even your own life. Because if you strive too much to do well in your career, you may be unconsciously turning your back on your family. Maybe you're not giving them enough time, because you're so busy trying to earn more money and provide for them. So you've got to get the balance right. And I think that's what it is. That's what it's like in prison. You've got to get the balance right. And I think there's got to be far more distinction made between those in prison who do want to change their offending behaviour and give them the opportunities. Because putting them in with people who've got absolutely no intention of turning their lives around, I don't see how that's going to work. I just think that just puts more obstacles in those people's way. And, you know, I met all kinds of people in prison. Was I judgmental before I went in? Yeah, of course I was. Very judgmental. Once I discovered people have, you know, everyone's got their own story, their own life story, and I listened to the circumstances of how they actually got into prison, you know, 9 out of 10 of them should never have been in there. They shouldn't. There were so many things along the way that could have been done that would have prevented them going into prison. It just doesn't seem to get spoken about. People don't want to listen to it. And I give you credit, Jack, because you do your podcast, and if it gets people thinking, if it makes people become more active, very similar to when I was doing my own podcast, the idea was to give people a voice, people that don't normally get listened to. If social media is their way of doing it, or podcast is their way of doing it. And I think that's what we can do collectively at the moment, is keep plodding on and keep saying it, and keep spreading that message. But whether we'll ever reach the powers that be, I don't know. How many great reformers are there around? Can you name many great prison reformers? I can't personally. I mean, you might be a bit closer to it, Kevin, in more recent terms than me. But not too many spring to mind.
No, I don't. I was just thinking then, prison reform trusted. But it's difficult. I can't think of that at the moment.
Is there an MP that you can think of? I can't personally. Yeah,
There's been MPs that have lobbied and campaigned for miscarriages of justice. Thank God for them. I mean, Alistair Burt, he campaigned for me. Other MPs did. I've written to Jeremy Corbyn. I've written to so many MPs. Mm. It's right to Lord Botham, Lord Ramsbottom, should I say. He campaigned for me, or he raised questions for me and spread the word about my case. So, yeah, I'm lucky for that. But we won't see no change in the government's policy until you get a Liberal government or someone who's got a little bit of a liberal mind in terms of how we contain our prisoners. And what that does to society, and they will look at it economically, and the cost of everything we've discussed now, mental health issues of violence and repetitive crime, they will look at that and think, well, hold on, they may have had some interest in another country, they may have visited another country, maybe did other prisons. So, well, listen, we are doing it wrong. Why don't we have a little go and try a couple of test prisons and see how that goes and see which ones work? Yeah. Just one that, look, we're going to have a model. So they did, they opened up Loudon Grange, didn't they? It was a private prison. Everyone wanted to get there, the new way of treating prisoners, blah, blah, blah. They probably did have a lot more better behaved prisoners there, but they were going doing short sentences going home. We were implementing those privileges into the long term prisoners. That kept them quiet, of course, because they're frightened of losing some of their PlayStations, some of them, but their TVs. 30 years wrapped round you. Christ, you shouldn't get sick of playing that or watching telly. Whereas if you'd have had an old Victorian prison slopping out, which I've done, and you've done, Frank, seeing the diesel tea tipped at your door, food put on the floor, unless you go down to the server and get it. But like you say, when you've done a bit of bird like that, your days are long. You have got prison sheets that have got holes in them and cockroaches crawling over your face at night, which I've had, and you may have had, Frank. But the sentences, like the 12 years, are a lot shorter, but your time was a lot different then. And you did look to each other for camaraderie, having a laugh, playing backgammon or Monopoly, or whatever you did something in that cell. So does a person need to be taken out of society for the length of time that they are to benefit, I say this respectively, the prisoner in that he's going to be released in society, he's done enough, he don't want to come back, and society? That's where they're getting it wrong. And if they can get it right, and like I said, follow another country, have a look at them, it may give us a lot more hope than we've got now, and a better country. Mm. Not better.
I mean, you look at Sweden, right? Like you said, and Norway and places like that shake your hand at the door. They give you the keys to your doors. You know, I think the closest we get is open prison, but you know, they you get a certain amount of responsibility. You get conjugal visits. You know, I mean, even Panama, I've got a friend that's serving 46 years in Panama. You know, and he's by far from innocent, he's in there for conjugal murder, but he gets conjugal visits.
Gives him something to hold on to. It keeps you humane. It's not about getting it gives you something that your body needs. It's in us for a reason. It's not in there for us to be bad. sinner to express love and feeling. Hmm. And unfortunately, they take that away from you, then that has a massive effect on a person, because that hormone and that balance in the brain isn't functioning right. And that's a massive thing to a person, to be loved and have love. Why do you think prisoners cuddle so much? Because they're starved of love. I don't mean that in the wrong way, but they'll give each other a hug. Mm-hmm. How are you doing? More so than you do outside. But then when I came home, I found I was still doing that a lot of things. I still do it now.
I do. I hug a lot. It's not because I'm starved of love. I'm not. You know, I've got my family. I've got my kids. I've got my wife. But you're right. It is. You build that camaraderie and that kind of brotherhood. You know, I can't speak more highly of brotherhood. Really, we need more of that. We're in a time now where there's lots of confusion on how you should act and stuff like that, and there's lots of judgment on, you know, sort of men standing up and talking about brotherhood and things like that. But we need it. We do need it. Men need strong men around them to help them, you know. Strong men breed strong men, and we need more strong men to be able to help, you know, some of the more vulnerable men to help build them up. You know, I've been vulnerable and I've had strong men around me my whole life, because you need it.
Well, I'll give you a bit of advice. Take advantage of my cuddling advice and cuddle a lot of women.
That'll make you feel I'm not going to agree with that in case my wife's in earshot. And I'm more scared of her than any of you. But you're right. No, I agree. I think you've got to have a case of where, look, if they put less emphasis, and I know I've sort of touched on this, but if they put less emphasis on you saying sorry and, oh, I wish I hadn't done it and blah, 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 because that's too easy. You know, at my parole hearing, shall we say, it was a woman sitting in front of me. The first thing I did was compliment her, because I was told I was going to be speaking to a doctor ball. I assumed it was going to be a bloke, and there was this woman sitting there. So I said, oh, before we go any further, I think I owe you an apology. I've been very sexist. I assumed you was going to be a gentleman. And she kind of like shuffled around and sort of went, oh, no. Because I said, oh, you're clearly not. So, you know, the old flattery started straight away. You know, I was buttering her up. I was trying to get her on side. There wasn't any, oh, I'm sorry, what I've done. Oh, I'm never, ever going to do it again. But that's what they wanted. They should have been more interested in what I'd done while I was there and what I was going to do when I got out. There was a small degree of that. But it was mainly they just wanted to know, has their punishment worked? Well, I'm sorry. No, your punishment didn't work. It didn't change me one little bit. In fact, you gave me an opportunity to have an insight into a world I'd never experienced before. It hardened me, if anything. It tested me to find out what sort of man I was. It toughened me up. It educated me. And the punishment, as I say, I don't think what they perceived to be punishment actually worked. Did they provide me with some education? Yes, they did. Am I grateful for that? Yes, I am. But if they think that slinging people in prison is a punishment, and they think they're going to walk out and go, all right, yeah, you've punished me, I'm never coming back here again. Well, we know that's not right. We know that's a false concept. Hmm. And as I say, we've covered quite a lot. We can be very hopeful as much as we like, but until the powers that be, you know, give us an opportunity to speak to young people and mentor young people, I don't see a lot changing.
If very briefly there, Frank, sorry to cut across you, I apologise for that. Charlie Johnson. Thank you. He's a product of the system. And some people were questioning some of his answers about he's not resentful or he's not what he's done. He's done in his life. He's led his life. People should understand that sometimes people's answers is not to show weakness or kindness when you've been battered and punished for so long. Yep. If you put him in the country, say he'd been released for 3 years, you ask him that question 3 years later, when he's been living in the countryside and maybe living a right quiet life of such at some times, you might find, you might turn around and say, do you know what, I wish I hadn't done a lot of the things I've done and hurt the people I did.
Yeah.
But it's not in his makeup at the minute, or it is inside he's thinking it, but it goes into overdrive. And I don't think people understand about the release plan and what they do to people in there, like Charlie. And that's what we're doing.
Well, we're never going to know, are we? We're never going to know until they let him out to see, you know, can he adjust? You know, he's clearly going to be tested. I mean, we touched on, you know, home leaves, you know, conjugal visits, town leaves, home leaves, etc. And I didn't have any town visits or any home leaves. And to be perfectly honest, I'm actually quite glad, because that would have given me a taste of normality and it wouldn't have lasted very long. It lasted a couple of days or a few hours in a town centre. I think that would probably have wound me up rather than appeased me. So in that sense, I wouldn't prevent anybody else that would want that. And if that's a process of getting people back into society, then great, I'm not going to knock that. I'm only talking about my own personal circumstances. But for somebody like Charlie, how on earth, you're right, how on earth do they expect him to behave or respond when he's never had the option of trying it out? He's never been in any other situation as than being in prison, or certainly for the last God knows how many years. So how can you judge how he's going to be? And that's why I say, I think, not just for Charlie, I'm not here to champion Charlie. As you say, he's got quite a good support network. I hope that continues for him. And but for other people, you need to be prepared before you come out. Not take the chance and come out. And you said about camaraderie. I remember the day I got my letter to say I was going to get parole and I had to go back into the economics class. I felt guilty. I actually felt guilty because I was going home. And yet there was murderers there. There was all kinds of people there. And some people clearly deserved to be in prison for a certain amount of time. But I actually felt guilty that I was going home. Now, what's that all about? You know, so you do become into, and I was certainly wasn't as long as you, Kevin. Yet to a certain degree, it was a degree of institution, you know, being institutionalized and living in a community and supporting each other. If someone ever had food, you know, you shared your food with them. You shared your candy. If they wanted to phone something, you gave them a phone call. You know, you did pull together. I learned that much. I did learn that much.
All about that now, isn't it?
Yeah, mate.
You know, it's different. It's so different now. And I realise that there are the ones that are serving a long time that really do want to get out, and they're trying to get out, and they're trying their best to becoming listeners, and you know, they're trying to work their way through the system, and they're fighting the cases. But you get the ones that you know, it's about that, and that's it. It's about money, it's about status and power, because they've got none on the outside, so they get it on the inside. And until you tackle that, you know, until you start to change their mind on the street or at home, they're still going to have that sort of narrow view.
You have to give them an option, and that is what the option is in prison. So if people can come in there, there's a lot of people say, actually, I've had enough of this. They're sick of it. They've been bullied in there, whatever. They have a good hiding. As a result of going to a good hiding, a job's come up and wallet, they can think, bugger, I'm going to go and do that, I'm going to move wings. That's what they should have, but they haven't got that option. A lot of the jobs like industrial cleaning and that don't come up a lot, and you only get cleared for it if a lot of people do, but there's not many places on there. So again, they haven't got the options in there that people think they may have, apart from being locked in a cell and taking drugs or getting depressed or bored with the routine. And that's about all I've got to say, gentlemen, on it, really. I do apologise to the folks. I've got my phone's going mental. I didn't realise how long it was going to be. I thought it was an hour, Jack.
No, that's all right, mate. You know, I want to thank you for coming on and, you know, giving your voice. I did want to ask one last thing that, you know, I've noticed that because you do a lot of television programmes and you do things like Lad Bible and stuff like that. I have noticed that you get portrayed in a certain way by the mainstream media. You know, when they do kind of focus on your violence, how does that affect you in your sort of journey to...
Frozen. Right, so how does it... Right, I learned very early on in the prison system that the media portray you in the light, trial by media. So when I realised I started getting help from the media, I thought, well, I'll fight my case for the media. It comes with that, you have to have whatever title they put you through. And of course, it comes with that, me talking about what they said about me. But hopefully people can who know me or meet me say, well, yeah, we've really met you and you are just quite down-to-earth fella. However, I spoke about it today with Raphael Rowe, ex-serving prisoner, miscarriage of justice, now an established presenter. And I said, the thing is, I didn't know about who was who in the underworld. I come from a village. I knew who was the cookies in the village, tough cookies, you know, but stuff like that. And in other towns and that, little places around this, but I didn't know anything about crime families or anything. And I met a girl whose family were quite notorious and well-known at a security company. And from there, got working at the door and went off. But I ended up in prison and bits and pieces. But if I hadn't gone down that path, because I could hold my hands up in the village, I wouldn't have been perceived the person who I am now if people met me, if it wasn't for a title and a sentence that I'd done. I understand that. But when people meet me and they find out if they don't know me already, through being, you know, friends and that, they're absolutely shocked. I said, this will never think it of you, Kevin. You just don't come across like that at all. And you behave in a manner that is really friendly. And that is me. It isn't me just giving you that. You know that, Jack and Frank. It is me. And I love going out. Mm-hmm. I said to Jack, I said to Raphael today, if I had a camera on my shoulder, you feel me, the amount of people I interact with, as I walk along the road, getting into the car, I have a few words with someone over something quite innocently, you know, a little chip laugh and such, man, woman, all shapes and sizes. It's a blimey, that bloke just goes about and you want a good time and enjoy life. Not what they say. So the violent side of things gets portrayed badly. It does have an effect on my life, especially with probation and that. But there's millions of people out there in society, millions of them, that would commit an act of violence for whatever reason they consider appropriate in the defence of their children or whatever, or their wife or a burglar or whatever. But if I do it because of my conviction, I'm dangerous. If it wasn't me who got arrested for common assault, I wouldn't have gone to prison for 18 and a half months. The other person would have been charged with criminal damage to my car, holding me illegally, keeping me a prisoner, holding me against my will by hiding my keys in their fridge and such. They were drunk. As a result of that, it caused a lot of damage to my vehicle and all sorts of things, which is, I've got the video evidence, and although I got arrested for it, I got arrested because I threw my ex-partner on the fifth occasion. Four other occasions, they put my arms around and put them in doors. But after the damage to my car and I threw her, I got charged. All of that stuff of being drunk and body cameras swirling at the old bill and all that mentalness was withheld. What happened? Common assault, bang, straight back to prison. Because I'm considered a violent man. And so when you go into civil courts, well, that's a criminal court, but such as, say, access to your child, that gets used against you. I remember a judge says to me, just because Mr. Lane is a convicted contract killer, it doesn't mean he isn't a good father. Mm-hmm. Fair play to you. But you still have Kafka saying, you've got to have a year's investigation. And you say, well, what for? I've seen my son right up to this point. Why do you need an investigation? But my conviction. And I didn't see my son for a year as a result of that. If it had been Joe Bloggs, there's no evidence of me harming my son. There's nothing like that. It was a dispute with my partner because I called her something and swore at her. Yeah. But then criminal conviction like me, I'm a dangerous, violent man. So it does have a massive impact on me. But you just have to just take on the chin and crack on and try at times to, thank God, when I overturn my conviction, that's when I was down in the Court of Appeal steps, as I told you so, and my life's going to change now. Because there's a lot of handcuffs on me all the time, how I live my life and what happens in my life with how people treat me, which they wouldn't do if I didn't have a conviction over my head. They're massive. I think about where I'll go, what I do, am I going to go somewhere and get myself in trouble, and then not see my children, okay, and my grandchildren, and not see my kids again. I've got children who are growing up now. And there's kids. And I don't want these to go through what Aaron and Tommy went through. But that keeps me out because I think about their little hearts. And that's where people get changed. What they feel in here. Love and kindness. And beating people with sticks don't work. But yeah, I went on a bit there, didn't I? Mm-hmm.
Thank you, mate. Yes, thank you for your time.
I'm in a bit of a similar position to Kevin. I've got another commitment. I'm going to have to move on. Can I just finish up by saying two things, or three things, really? One, thanks very much for inviting me on this evening. Very much appreciate that. Also appreciate the opportunity to meet Kevin and listen to Kevin. Very wise man. Very wise man. And that's not trying to flatter you or butter you up. I'm being sincere about that. And you can send me the money for saying it. That's it. Just trying to be a little bit light-hearted there because we've been a bit serious. And I'm just going to finish up with one other thing which might confuse people, but I'm actually glad I got caught. And I've been serious about that. I'm actually glad I got caught because it was only ever going to get worse. And when I said that to my wife on the first open cat A visit, she couldn't believe it. And I said to her, where did you think this was going to lead? You can't be in charge. And you can't have guns wrapped around you and not use them. And one day, and she said to me, you telling me the guilt I'm on. And that's a very difficult thing to have to admit to your wife, you know, and a mother of your children. But that was the line in the sand for me. That was the line in the sand. So I'm glad I got caught. So don't do what I've done, people. Don't get caught in the first place because don't do anything wrong. So I love you and leave you. All right. And thanks very much.
Kev,
I'll meet up again sometime in the future.
I'd like that, Frank. You can tell you're a lovely man, very straight man. I'd love to have a chat with you and meet up with you.
Lovely. We'll have a pint.
Great company.
Jack, thank you, Jack. I say thanks very much for this evening. I really much appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Message me, Frank. Cheers. Take care.
I'll see you again.
All the best. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, lads. All the best.
Great. Cheers, guys. Cheers. Nice.